As a longtime complementary medicine practitioner, I know how important it is to ensure that the supplements I prescribe are genuine, professional grade, and effective. That's why I use Fullscript as my online dispensary, so I can send my patients as well as Intelligent Medicine listeners the exact products they need. If you're a healthcare provider, do what I did and sign up for a free Fullscript account. Just go to fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. It's the easiest way for you to prescribe the exact supplement protocols your patients need. Fullscript is the most trusted source for professional-grade supplements. Sign up for a free Fullscript account at fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. That's fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mutin. I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist. I work with Dr. Hoffman on a daily basis. And you can download these podcasts at drhoffman.com. So take a look there, and under Listen, just click on Listen. You can get the entire list of all the recent and archived podcasts. So today, want to talk to you about a few things, but I've got a response here from DG. So let me start with that. DG, dear Layla, heard you state that black pepper is used to enhance absorption of curcumin. And DG provides me with a list of references citing the potential adverse effects of the piperine that's found in the black pepper. And also, she's got some, information from one manufacturer of curcumin. And now DG is asking, could you tell us whether or not to search out curcumin with pepper? Here's the thing about piperine. Piperine became known about, I think back in my days with Dr. Atkins, this was shortly before he died in 2003. And I know that in one of his supplements, he was using piperine to enhance the absorption of black pepper. And DG, I want you to, I appreciate you sending me all of these citations from the Natural Library of Medicine, the PubMed database, because at the time, the thing that we also noticed when we switched how those supplements were being manufactured, the people who were taking them started reporting adverse effects. Not everybody, but some people. And apparently piperine, the active in black pepper that helps with the absorption, can aggravate the colon. And especially in those with either irritable bowel syndrome or inflammatory bowel disease. I even tell my patients with inflammatory bowel disease like ulcerative colitis, Crohn's, to avoid black pepper because it's an irritant. DG has provided me with a lot of references on toxicity to mice, rats, hamsters, and that these rodents were actually given lethal doses. They were found that it may promote DNA damage, cytotoxicity, and all of that. These were very, very high doses, and most of these were rat studies. Now, here's the other thing about piperine. A lot of manufacturers still use it in their products, and a lot of people are fine with it. But the thing about curcumin is the piperine, and many manufacturers, including ones like Thorne that we've used and others, the BCM95 that you actually quote, they are using now, the nutraceutical companies are using lipid particle technologies instead of using piperine anymore, because they found adverse effects. They're finding these results in rat studies that it may be a problem. And remember, these are rat studies, and very high doses of piperine were used. I want to make the analogy of, you know, an apple a day keeps the doctor away, fine. But if you eat a basket of apples, you're going to get a stomach ache. So very high doses are used in these studies. And so I want you to keep that in mind. So to answer your question, DG, Can you tell us whether or not to search out curcumin with pepper? No. But if you're currently taking a curcumin with the piperine technology, there are now better technologies out there, and that's the lipid particle technology. They're using things like sunflower oil. They're trying to, the turmeric, the curcumin, attaches to phospholipids. Our bodies make phospholipids, but by adding them now in the supplements, when I say now, I mean over the previous, at least 5 years, that nutraceuticals are using lipid particle technology, they're finding this method makes the curcumin more deliverable to the cells, more bioavailable to the cells. And even in the protocol supplement that I like called Cogumin is very, very good because it will cross the blood-brain barrier. In our practice, we use at least 3 different types of curcumin at this point, and they are all using this lipid particle technology and not the piperine technology, the black pepper technology. So for those of you who are wondering if you're taking the best kind of curcumin, it may not be if they're using the black pepper technology, that the piperine not only is not making the curcumin very bioavailable, but there may be adverse effects. Now, in humans, you're getting a very small dose of piperine in your supplement, much different than a rat mouse model that are being given possible human doses of that piperine, and of course we're seeing an adverse reaction. It's very hard to extrapolate from rodent studies, to extrapolate those findings onto humans. So look for the lipid particle technology. That's really the way to go. There is now Mareva and other curcumin brands that are being used, again, with sunflower oil. They are sustained release. They're using different lipids, different methods with this lipid technology. And it's all very, very promising. Thank you, DG, for this very comprehensive response back to me about the black pepper. Okay, for those of you who have questions, comments, the destination for that is radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. Nutrition may play a key role in early psychosis treatment, new research says. This is out of Integrative Practitioner. I was at a wonderful, the IHS, the Integrative Healthcare Symposium. Dr. Hoffman and I have talked about this on podcast earlier on, but it's such a wonderful symposium to attend. I look forward to it almost every year. It happens generally in February, you know, in that bleak of wintertime. I get a lot of nourishment and brain stimulation at this symposium. It's wonderful. So this is right out of their particular their magazine. Nutrition may play a role, a key role, in early psychosis treatment, new research says. Early psychosis is associated with nutritional deficiencies, potentially presenting new avenues for improving health among the millions of people affected worldwide. According to research announced, that was announced actually the beginning of this past winter. Research led by NICM Health Research Institute at Western Sydney University in Australia systematically reviewed evidence examining nutritional deficiencies in people being treated for psychotic disorders. The researchers assessed 28 studies examining blood levels of 6 vitamins and 10 minerals across 2,600 individuals, 2,612 to be exact. Participants were assessed either immediately after presenting with psychotic disorders such as schizophrenia for the first time prior to antipsychotic treatment or within the early stages of treatment. Early detection and treatment of psychotic disorders is thought to be critical for maximizing recovery. Previous research has shown a strong correlation between long-term schizophrenia, and various nutritional deficiencies, including vitamins B, C, D, and E. However, previous research failed to assess the full range of nutritional deficiencies, which may be present during the first episode of psychosis. The research, published in the world's leading schizophrenia research journal, Schizophrenia Bulletin, found that early psychosis is associated with large deficits in blood levels of critical nutrients, with particularly low levels of folate, also called vitamin B9, folate, and vitamin D. So they're finding early psychosis is associated with large deficits in blood levels of critical nutrients like folate and vitamin D. Furthermore, these nutritional deficiencies were found to be associated with worse mental health in young people with early psychosis. Although the review found no significant differences for other vitamins and minerals, the researchers said that due to a small number of studies that examined these nutrients, they could not be ruled out, and further study was needed to determine their importance. Joseph Firth, the lead author and NICM postdoctoral research fellow, said these findings could ultimately contribute to nutritional interventions being added into standard treatment of early psychosis. Although just one of many factors, he says, it is important to recognize that nutritional deficiencies could certainly be contributing to the poor physical and mental health outcomes often observed in young people with psychosis. The research found vitamin D and folate deficiencies previously observed in long-term schizophrenia exist right from illness onset and are associated with worse symptoms among young people with psychosis. Since both of these nutrients are vital for physical and psychological well-being, this finding emphasizes the importance of promoting a healthy diet for young people with psychosis and potentially suggests adding targeted nutritional supplementation to standard treatment could improve recovery. Although, says Firth, this theory has yet to be tested. Jerome Saris, senior author and deputy director at NICM, says, while the results of our data analysis reveal that nutrient deficiencies are endemic in people suffering from first episode psychosis, further work is needed to determine whether this is a byproduct of the disorder, an effect from psychiatric medications, or whether lifestyle factors are to blame, which is very interesting because it could be all three. Psychiatric medications are known to cause nutritional deficiencies, especially in the B vitamins, and folate would be included. I know it's in other medications like diabetes medications like metformin. Lifestyle factors, certainly if you're seeing this in young people would be the demographic who would probably have a poorer diet than somebody older, right? And so lifestyle factors would definitely be to blame. And low vitamin D is endemic throughout the world. So a thank you to the author, Catherine Rushlow, from Integrative Practitioner. Nutrition may play a key role in early psychosis treatment. Everything has a nutritional basis. I've always agreed that this was true. Now, even more, beyond nutrition, there's exercise. small dose exercise guards against depression. 1 hour a week of low intensity exercise may be all it takes to prevent depression. A large population-based cohort study of healthy adults suggests being active is good for you, even in small doses. Taken regularly, exercise is good for you. We know that it boosts endorphins and good neurotransmitters, and it probably prevents mental ill health. So, if physicians have a patient with a history of depression, this advice is particularly important. Do regular small amounts of enjoyable exercise. Patients don't have to run a marathon. So think about this. 3 20-minute brisk walks a week. And this was published last fall, October, in the American Journal of Psychiatry. Now, the Hunt study, the health study of Nord-Trøndelag County, study is among the largest and most comprehensive population health surveys ever done. There was no added benefit beyond 1 hour. So listen, you don't have to be an exercise maniac to help depressive disorder. Phase one of the study was carried out between January 84, February, and February 86. All persons aged 20 years and older living in Norway's Nord-Trøndelag County were invited to respond to questions about their lifestyle and medical history. They also underwent a physical examination. So, at the time of their baseline assessment, all participants were asked how often they engaged in exercise, and the researchers graded the intensity of the exercise on the basis of answers to questions as to whether the participants exercised without becoming breathless or sweating, whether exercise resulted in breathlessness and sweating, or whether exercise resulted in near exhaustion. So they rated the quality of exercise. A total of 22,564 individuals were successfully assessed during phase two of the Hunt study. The authors stressed that this was a very healthy cohort of individuals at the study's outset. Younger participants and women were particularly more likely to undergo a follow-up assessment. So, after adjustment for a range of confounders, those who reported undertaking no exercise at baseline had a 44% increased odds of developing case-level depression compared with those who were exercising 1 to 2 hours a week. The authors also found a significant negative relationship between the total amount of exercise undertaken at baseline and risk of future depression. They also determined that had everyone exercised 1 hour a week, 12% of the cases of depression that were identified at follow-up could have been prevented. The same was not true for anxiety, the prevalence of which was similar at follow-up, regardless of the level of baseline exercise. Anxiety is a little bit of a different animal because some people who are already prone to anxiety, because exercise will upregulate your adrenal function, some people find that it may cause a little more anxiety than usual. So it's a little bit more complicated for anxiety. So the doctor associated with this study, Dr. Hadoff and colleagues, also found a significant protective association between baseline levels of exercise and future depression for those younger than age 50 and for those older than age 50. Most of the protective effect of exercise is realized with relatively low levels of exercise, with no indication of any additional benefit beyond 1 hour of exercise each week. The protective effect was seen equally across all groups, regardless of the intensity of exercise that was undertaken or the gender or age of the population. This is very, very important information for those of you who believe you have to be warriors in your exercise. You don't. We're talking about 3 20-minute jogs a day, 3 20-minute brisk walks a day. It also increases your BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. So, and then commenting on the findings, Mats Hallgren, PhD, a researcher at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden, said a study he conducted into the treatment of mild to moderate depression yielded similar findings. So we're finding replication in another study. That study involved 946 patients with mild to moderate depression who were assigned to undergo either yoga or stretching, moderate aerobic exercise, or vigorous aerobic experience. Patients were encouraged to participate in 3 exercise sessions a week, but most only attended about 1 per week, Dr. Hallgren pointed out. At the end of 12 weeks, Dr. Hallgren and colleagues found that the severity of depression was significantly lower among patients who participated in any one of the exercise interventions compared to those who received usual care, and that the benefits of exercise were seen regardless of how intensely the patients exercised. Furthermore, the benefits of exercise on depression were maintained 12 months after baseline assessment, despite suboptimal adherence. Dr. Hallgren says, I think the recommendation should not be to exercise only once a week because people need to exercise more than once a week for general health. So for that reason alone, we should recommend that people exercise 3 times a week. But even if they exercise only once a week, exercise can still have beneficial effects on depression. Exercise is medicine for depression. Even when the pill is small, says Dr. Hallgren. Amen to that. So, more reason for lifestyle changes for treating mental disorders, depression, psychoses, diet and lifestyle first. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine.
As a longtime complementary medicine practitioner, I know how important it is to ensure that the supplements I prescribe are genuine, professional-grade, and effective. That's why I use FullScript as my online dispensary so I can send my patients, as well as Intelligent Medicine listeners, the exact products they need. If you're a healthcare provider, do what I did and sign up for a free FullScript account. Just go to fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. It's the easiest way for you to prescribe the exact supplement protocols your patients need. FullScript stocks the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere. The best part, FullScript sends out refill reminders, so it's totally effortless for your patients to stay on track with their supplement protocols. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant, and they offer world-class support. Improve patient outcomes, rest easier knowing your patients are getting exactly what you prescribed them. FullScript is the most trusted source for professional-grade supplements. Sign up for a free FullScript account at fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. That's fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.